Hey everybody, it is Austin here with a content warning for this episode. We go pretty long on the ongoing wave of allegations of sexual misconduct and more general harassment throughout the video games industry for the first, I'd say, little bit of this episode. It's tough to give exact times because of the way ads are kind of procedurally entered into certain listeners' feeds. It's not a thing that we have exact information on how long an ad is or who will get it. And so that means timestamps are a little tough, but we think it will be around 12 minutes to 51 minutes, somewhere in there. Again, we don't go too deep on any particular case. We don't go too deep in any particular incident. We're not going beat by beat. We're not getting into specifics. It's a larger conversation around the state of the culture, the ways in which this is a systemic issue, and then some particular cases, but not in terms of the events of the allegations or anything like that. I will say there is an additional smaller conversation at around 43 or 44 minutes, depending on the ads, in which we briefly discuss familial abuse. Interfamilial abuse, which is about 2 minutes long, 3 minutes long, something like that. So maybe an extra note of caution there for folks. Just want to make sure everyone who listens is able to be safe, and we hope that you've had a safe and secure week, and that the weekend is good. All right, that's it. I'll let you listen to this podcast, which I promise is not as dour as I sound in this moment. It opens up. It's very nice and bright. Patrick's back. Look forward to that. And then the back half after that 50-minute mark or 51, 52-minute mark, we come back and talk about some games we've been playing. So if you're just not in a place where you can listen to the first half of this podcast, we totally understand. Go ahead, jump ahead and hang out with us for a little bit. All right. I hope everyone has a good week or weekend, whatever day it is. Peace.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What's good, internet? It's Friday, June 26th, and you're listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 324. I'm your host, Austin Walker, and I am joined today by Gita Jackson.
Hello.
Rob Zachney.
Good morning.
Ricardo Contreras.
Yo.
Okay, that was a little, that was hot. Are you okay?
That sounded dismissive, like, yo.
Yo.
Hey, you'll
sorry.
Miss.
I probably yeah.
You'll miss.
Hold on.
Are you chewing something, Kato? Are you eating?
Sorry, hey, yeah, I didn't mention earlier.
You know how producers are. Love the chewing noises on the tracks.
I'm moving away from my mic, which is why that yo was like, oh shit, I took a bite at the wrong time.
And you already heard the voice rejoining us to his natural, rightful place among us. Patrick Klepek is here again.
Got this Patrick. Coffee mug that heats itself now.
What?
Father's Day
what?
Meat.
That's what?
That's what my my family got me for Father's Day, although a week ahead of time. My wife surprised me with gifts and presents from my family, and then someone later in the day was like, "Why are you celebrating Father's Day?" And it was like, "Because it's today." I'm like, "No, it's next week." I was like, "Well, I got all my shit early." So
well, that's
no, they got Ember. You've probably seen it at like Target or something like that, but it's just it's
you
a mug.
Charge it.
It's got a little charger, but it's got heating coils inside. And so for up to 90 minutes, you can set the exact temperature, which I give no shits about. I'm just like warm.
Warm. Hot.
Rob, I feel like would be, it's the coffee one. 135 is the coffee temperature it suggests. But it keeps it warm for up to 90 minutes, which is great because I drink my coffee extremely slowly.
Right.
And so I'm constantly having to like fry the coffee
Yes.
In the microwave, and
it tastes so much worse.
It tastes so much worse, but I also am not the, like, I know some people like get a small cup of coffee and just slam it and then they do their thing. I like to, that coffee is like the pause I do when I'm like frustrated with a line and something that I can't quite get. It's like, I'm going to sit here, I'm going to sip this coffee, and it's like, oh, it's cold. Damn, I'm going to get up and fry this for the third time.
Patrick, I never thought I would have so much in common with Midwestern dad, but I do that same exact shit. Like, coffee is a prop. Were you a person, were any of you the kind of person that would go to diners as a teenager to hang out and just drink endless cups of coffee?
God.
Yeah, Rob Zachney, I knew that you would say yes.
I lived. That's like my friends and I, what do you want to do? The 20. Phoenix Diner? Do you want to be like, I got them on deck. We had like five. We rotated because they get annoyed with us because all we would do is sit there until 3 a.m. drinking coffee and ordering toast. Because we're like, I feel bad. We should order some food. Let me order an order of toast.
They would hate us. Yeah, we would get french fries and just a million cups of coffee with free at that's the Athenian fries too.
Hell yeah.
Did they have lemon rice soup?
No, I was not.
Let me tell you something about 16-year-old Austin. He wasn't at a diner looking at the soup menu. It was breakfast all day every day. Diner time.
Oh, see, it was a weird thing at the Greek diners where I lived, and like literally half the diners were Greek diners.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
that's true.
The weird thing was maybe they were all in competition with each other. Their value add to like any order was just like, you want some lemon rice soup? And so
we got this bucket. Like, it shows like, up every week.
All day.
I don't know who makes it. It's just this soup.
It's just the haunted soup that they have in the diner. It's like, please.
It
replenishes itself every day.
If we don't hand it out, another one shows up.
It did kind of feel like you were obligated to, like, they were so, like, you want the lemon rice, right, kids? And I was like,
Lemon rice?
Sure.
God. But anyway, I was just going to say, at diners, coffee is a prop, you know? You're drinking it, but you're also gesturing with it. You learn how to pose with it. And it's always something that I associated with, you know, with when I became a writer. I realized I got these, this is so embarrassing, I'm so sorry. I got these CBD joints that are completely legal in the state of New York, because I realized that when I quit smoking and I quit juuling also. So I have now this issue. I don't know what to do with my hands when I write because I'm used to chain smoking. And this helps. This helps with the, I need that sort of prop in my hands or hanging off my lip. I don't know. Anyway,
I don't miss smoking, but I miss everything that went along with smoking.
Yes. Yes. The Lady J's CBD joints. I got to say, they actually do calm me down.
I swear these are not advertisements. You'd be able to tell if they were advertisements.
They
would repeat three times in a row
Lady
for
J's,
some fucking reason.
If you
want to
give me a lot of these, I wouldn't say no.
Okay, so I will simply say this. And yes, is this kitsch? Absolutely. But a good alternative to a mug with heating coils in it, because that just sounds way too, that sounds very extra for what I need from a mug. But if I could suggest one of these wide-bottomed nautical coffee mugs.
Oh my God.
Excuse
yes.
me.
Yes. Do they pop up in crap tourist towns right and left? Absolutely.
Oh my God, I cannot
believe.
But
they do tend to keep that cup of coffee very, very warm because obviously they're tapered. And so like.
Well, so this is also my problem. We have like 35 to 40. Like one of the things, like when I was in my 20s, I started collecting shot glasses from like places that I would go. Like I'd be at the airport and it's like, all right, I'm just going to buy something to put on the shelf at home. And in my 30s, I started collecting.
Thing I've ever heard about you.
Started collecting coffee mugs. So now my problem is the Ember solves my practical like issue that I have with coffee around the house, especially now running around with 1 to 2 kids every single day. That said,
I
love all the goofy mugs that we have, different sizes and shapes. And there's like a history to them. Like, oh, we bought that when we did that. Or like, that's from that trip that we did this. And so I am losing that with this, but it's warm all the time. So I feel like I'm going to leave it behind. Although I've thought about maybe.
Patrick, you're turning into my dad.
Well, I've thought about this a lot. I've had a lot of time to think, Rob, a lot of time to worry about the moment to moments every single day and how to spend them. I've thought about what if the first cup of coffee a day, which is the one that I just like go through quickly. It's just like, all right, this first one is just going in the system and out. And that one could be in like my nice like coffee mug, and I can look at the steam, and then the rest is just after about 10 o'clock, it's like, this is just fuel to get through the day, as opposed to remembering that kitschy diner that we went to in Vegas and bought the cool mug.
Yeah, do that. That sounds fun. That sounds like the right call. I support this. This I'm down with.
Thank you.
What were we even? How did we get here? How did we get here?
So know. Patrick was brandishing his mug, and he's really proud of it. And he had nothing to tell us about his leave or what he's been up to, because he's just been collecting Father's Day gifts, which, true, is now like twice the amount of his day.
I mulched my entire lawn. I finished it the day before I came back. It was a nice 75 degree day. What I learned, what I wanted to learn.
Organize your mug collection. You'll mulch the lawn.
Well, look, it,
classic dad shit.
Our yard to mulch is, I do it once every 2 years. Like, I'll pay people to come out and weed it and to mulch it. And it's expensive. It is, off the top of my head, like $1,200. I was trying to figure out.
What?
Am I like, oh, dude, it's a big yard. It's like, how am I, I'm trying to say that without bragging.
Wow. This motherfucker. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of fucking money for just like the wood chips to turn a little browner, frankly. And so
I could, Patrick is a step away from being like, what do you need that for? I could build one of those in the garage. What do you need? What is that? A microwave? Such we could build a fucking microwave. What is this? Some brown? Yeah, we could, I could get some brown paint, turn the mulch brown. What do you want?
Just some, you know what?
If I could just like spray, get a spray,
a little
paint
spray.
Just,
a little, a shake can.
I got this 3 months ahead of me. I'm gonna mulch it myself. I'm gonna have afternoons where I got time to myself. Like, I'm just gonna do this. I'm gonna do this project on my own. And I slowly did it over the course of 3 months. And let me tell you, that $1,200 worth every penny. Those workers are not overpaid a cent. They earn that money. That $1,200 underpaid, perhaps.
Especially the workers, I would suspect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most likely.
Yeah.
You must ask your groundskeeper.
Next time I am on the podcast, but I'm definitely not going to be on next week, basically. So I'm moving to a new place with a backyard in New York City, which is exciting for me. It's concrete, but I'm going to build some planters. I've decided.
You know what you're going to do? You're going to grill.
I am going to grill, actually.
It's a patio. That sounds like a patio, but yes, that's a grilling fucking patio to me.
I'm going to get some, there is a bunch of spare wood in this backyard that I guess is now just mine. And listen, all you need to do to build a planter, all you need is chicken wire and some planks, essentially. I've looked at different configurations. You need mulch, dirt, chicken wire, and planks. And we've already got all this wood. I know how to use a drill, and I'm going to do this project.
Is that a threat?
Because I would love to have tomatoes.
I know
how to use this drill.
I mean,
that sounds good. Tomatoes are good. Tomatoes are great at home. Wow, that's
I'd love to have a vegetable garden and some flowering plants in there.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe when I'm grilling some hamburgers, I could just grab a tomato from my garden and slice it up for you.
There you go. Hell yeah. That sounds good. That sounds perfect. So we should actually have a podcast. Welcome back, Patrick. I feel like we were going somewhere with the welcome back, and I've since lost the plot. But thank you for returning to us. We've missed you a great deal. I'm lucky to have you back, because today we got some fucking news, and we needed newsman Patrick Klepek here to help us unpack it. Not that we couldn't do it without you. No offense. We could figure it out. But it's Okay. Sorry. I didn't listen. I'm just saying, I had to cover my bases. I had to be like, well, it's not like we couldn't do it. I trust Robin Eden.
No, the fact that I was able to take these 3 months and legitimately not, I mean, I should say very briefly before we transition, that like,
yes,
a great thanks to everyone at Motherboard and Vice Games for like, there's a world where this 3 months. I mean, I told Rob privately, he knows this, like, hey, if you truly need me to like come pinch it, if you need help, like let me know. Like, I will figure it out. Like, I want to disappear, but I also, you know, have the backs of everyone here. And like, that call never came. And I'm sure things were easier and harder on different days, weeks, and months as I was gone. But for as difficult as my individual circumstances were for even having that time to myself, the fact that I didn't have to have work on top of that for that period was really, really nice. And that's a testament to all the folks on this call and the folks not on this call that I was able to, like really spend that time and focus in on my family. So thank you.
Yeah, I'm really glad you get to have that time. Shout outs to unions, it turns out, ensuring and fighting for benefits like better leave when you have a kid. To some more serious news, I don't think that we could possibly start a podcast about video games this week and talk about video games this week without talking about the ongoing kind of wave of allegations around sexual harassment, sexual assault, and other sorts of sexual misconduct on top of other types of some of this is also caught up in racist workplace environment posts that themselves are then tied to sexual harassment or other sorts of sexual misconduct. and it has just been a kind of constant flurry over the last few days that has been kind of nonstop. And I guess the thing that I would start with here is that I think it's an important one is that like trust and believe. Victims who come forward and who tell their stories, you know that's how we feel about this on the show. But it's important that I reiterate it again today. The second thing I want to say is like, it is also important to understand that I have seen a certain sort of thought cross the timeline a little bit here, which is there's two versions of it. The first version of it I get, which is this is really exhausting because I've suffered something, and now every time I go online, all I see is more allegations, and I have to relive my trauma constantly. I have to take a step back. This is important that it's happening, but I have to take a step back. I've also seen the sort of sentiment that's like, isn't this going to like wrap up soon? And the answer is like, no, not anytime soon. You know, this is an important reminder for me that like this is a systemic issue and all of these sorts of broad systemic issues, which in this case is like harassment and abuse and sexual assault and misogyny and homophobia, because many of these cases are done on the backs of the vulnerability that comes with being in a marginalized position. You know, they're not going to be solved all at once. There's going to be another wave of this, a second or a third. I mean, this is already a second or a third wave.
We had one like
wave.
A year ago.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. This continues. And there's a reason it happens in waves is because when there's a crowd, it feels the you know, what is it, the phrase about Twitter, like every day there's a character and a main character and you're just trying not to be that person. And usually that's meant in a negative sense because you've done something worthy of ire. But in this case, the reason that so many folks jump on to speak to their own truth is because it's not just everyone pointing at you. You can speak into a larger crowd to speak to a larger moment. And so that creates this wave that can feel oppressive and overwhelming, and it's fine to step back from it. But there's a reason why folks feel safe to come forward as part of that.
And they
wave.
Should. And they should. And it's going to keep happening. And like there are going to be additional people who are outed, who you admire, who we admire. That's going to happen. And I think it's important to like recognize that one of the things that predators do is blend in. They kept their fucking heads down last time, that, you know, and it's going to happen again because, you know, a lot of this grows out of a culture in which vulnerable people, most often women, but as we've seen, not only women, are targeted by predators who are able to move through systems that make those targets more vulnerable by forcing them into contact and into situations where their precarity rests on, or the solution to their precarity seems to be things like gaining the trust of people who are already established, going to industry networking events, often where there is like a ton of alcohol and where they're not necessarily safe. And then that same industry provides cover for the predators, as especially when those predators are at the higher levels of success in the industry. And that's what we've seen in the last few days. And at this point, I'm talking about the industry stuff. But I think, you know, before we started, someone pointed out there's kind of two lanes here, right?
So, yeah, just a quick note I wanted to say, as someone who stopped drinking over a year ago, the role that alcohol plays in some of these stories is really clear. And I don't ever want to tell anyone what to do, but there is something about the way that predators use repeated applying with drinks to get people to pass the point of being able to comprehend that is really dangerous for young people in the industry. And so many networking events take places at bars. Mm-hmm. And I think that we should all be thinking about ways to allow marginalized people to network in this industry without forcing them to go to a bar. Like, I just feel like we have to move beyond that now. Like, we just have to do that. It would be safer for everyone. But yes, there are basically two genres of things that are happening right now. There are several communities of streamers focused around specific games like Dota or Destiny that have had their own sort of intra-community reckonings, streamers calling out other streamers for abusing their positions of power. And then there has been a series of game developers at major studios that have been called out for also abusing their positions of power, usually with fans, although other developers have also been making their own statements.
Yeah. And this has happened, what, across in like Destiny, in Dota, some other communities.
Saw some Warframe stuff going around.
Yep.
Which, I mean,
you could like kind of spin the wheel and... At this point, there's probably...
Well,
there's some
right,
stuff in the FGC. There's some stuff in the Pokemon community. There's a lot of stuff.
Because this is a kind of culture-wide problem. This is not just a thing unique to a specific company or a specific scene. There can be scenes that have an increase in this because they especially don't take allegations seriously. There can be a company, certainly, where, you know, we've seen again and again when HR serves as PR, right? HR serves to cover things up. And maybe they have we can speak about Vice here very clearly, that like the HR department at Vice for a long time was functionally covering up or providing opacity for abuse and harassment allegations at the company, right? So that's like one that's been written about. It was a huge scandal a few years ago. We know that that's the sort of thing that can happen. I would say that the culture here seems better now, and so you can do that sort of like how is it to comparison between two different companies. But when it's a cultural problem throughout the kind of like veins of the entire culture, it's going to happen everywhere, and that's why it requires a larger response.
Yeah, there are some things that I've been seeing people talk about online, trying to understand why the culture of video games has led to so many different people abusing their positions of power, often men, but not always men, where some people are finally taking a step back and thinking about what is it about video games that they have deliberately found this market of young men and are selling them explicitly through marketing this ad campaigns about you are the most powerful person in the world. Like, maybe that's not good to encourage that throughout our entire culture, throughout our entire family.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, though, it is. I'm not saying that a video, one, video games and video game culture, deeply misogynistic.
Yeah.
Absolutely, 100%. But I do think that this has also happened in music journalism. This has also happened in the music industry. This also, the music industry is any less misogynistic or connected to rape culture. And I think that's the kind of broader point I'm making is like, our culture is one.
The dismantling of the patriarchy was the thing that we need to do to make sure that this never happens again. Right.
Exactly.
Like that.
Exactly.
We need to like unbuild culture and build it back up again. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we can do that over the weekend, basically.
We'll keep working on it.
I do think it's worth thinking about, though, the particularities of how, in the culture of music, there has always been this narrative of groupies, right? Where, these are just young women and they want to sleep with all these bands and then be tossed aside. They want that, you know? And there's these, the ways in which women are treated in the music industry there's a particularities of the misogyny and how it's played out. And there has been efforts from artists in the industry to dismantle that and rebuild it. Not entirely successful, but there have been great strides. I think in games, we have not even gotten to the not entirely successful restructuring part. You know, it's beyond time for us to talk about the particularities of how misogyny plays out in our scene.
I think, though, that... So there's a weird thing. Every industry is grappling with this. And so to a degree, I think there's a lot of places where this feels like this is treated as a local story. And in some ways it is, because the characteristics of abuse and poor behavior do change based on like the shape and structures of an industry. But also, this is part of a broader reckoning we do see happening across a lot of different industries. And I think something I find myself thinking about a lot, too, is how many places is this happening where public figures don't exist in the same way as in the entertainment industry? How many places do you have these sort of abusive relationships happening, but you never hear about them because nobody cares who, you know, a 12-store franchise, you know, what the CEO of a 12-store franchise in the Midwest does. But these things probably happen everywhere. And I think there's a I think it is important to keep the focus in games because this is our beat. This is our backyard. But I think one of the things that is really clear right now about this moment is that when we talk about like structural inequalities and precarity affecting vulnerable people, that's happening across the board. And it may take on a different cast depending on what industry you're talking about. But in the last like few years, and certainly in the last like couple months, it's become crystal clear that it's happening in myriad ways and myriad forms across pretty much any type of like activity you can imagine. And that is really disturbing. And I think a lot about like how many people, like how many predators are out there in industries where just because they are so anonymous, they will never be outed in that same way, right? Like how many petty tyrants are out there mistreating people and sort of putting a cap on their careers, and it just doesn't get attention because these are considered like boring jobs, boring workplaces. Well, yeah. Well,
YouTubers used to be in that sort of same category, not boring jobs, but 3 to 4 years ago, I would hear that people would do the same kind of thing where they'd say, hey, this YouTuber XYZ mistreated me in XYZ ways. And part of the response when inevitably people accuse them of lying was, how could this person manipulate you? How could they be in a position of power? They're a YouTuber. Now, with that, after that enormous case with the music YouTuber that was soliciting nudes and nude videos from underage fans, where he was arrested and is now in jail, people, I think, understand more that a cult of personality, it doesn't matter how quote unquote famous they are, as soon as you are in charge of a community or the figurehead that's in charge of a community, you have a responsibility to the community to not, I don't know, abuse them. Just a suggestion. People have a better understanding of that. But that took a really long time. And there were a lot of victims in that time. You know, that is always the thing that hurts, is that you know that there's going to be people that that don't have this chance to have their abusers held accountable. And it's painful. It's I was assaulted in college and then assaulted after college. And it's really personal for me because I know I have a duty as a journalist to like be somewhat impartial and have a remove. But I feel I understand the pain because I have felt a lot of this pain and confusion and frustration and just deep, deep anger that no one did anything and that I was left alone to pick up the pieces. So you think just like if that hurts so much for me, then there's not just the people that have come forward are feeling that. So many people are.
Well, in this case, we're also, you know, when you're speaking to Ubisoft or an Insomniac, you know, studios that have in some level of like an infrastructure, right? In theory, an HR department that can handle complaints, like whether they do so appropriately is an open question and something that I think is being reckoned with, you know, in this moment. You know, specifically what's different about, you know, YouTube and Twitch is, you know, and this is a broader cultural problem where we our institutions fail us, and so we turn to corporations who in a weird way have become closer to our government institutions in a lot of ways to solve those problems for us. And so it's like when someone on YouTube or Twitch or any of these services is accused, there's no department to turn to. It's just make enough noise or organize like a blackout on Twitch and hope that they pay attention. But there's no formal record. There's no there's not even like paperwork to follow where you can try and hold them accountable. Like it's already so difficult in places that are supposed to have an infrastructure to serve the issues of their employees. And in you know, the comparison of YouTube creators being the employees of YouTube isn't perfect, but like for the sake of this like discussion is worth thinking about, because part of the reason those those institutions work is because they don't actually want to be responsible for the people they make money off of. And so they are thus so much less reliable and then requires society, because we can't expect the government regulation to come in and like do anything about this. So instead it's just, if we make enough fucking noise on Twitter, maybe they'll pay attention. But what does that mean, right? Like quietly banning some people for how long?
Yeah.
Did they take away their, you know, status to make money on old videos? Are they still making tens of thousands off stuff? You know, like there's just so much a lack of transparency and no real levers to pull other than making noise, which is maybe satisfying in the moment, but does not necessarily indicate large structural change.
Oh, well, I think it definitely has hit at the thing that you brought up here, which is that like – platforms like YouTube and Twitch are effectively employers, but with none of the responsibility and none of the accountability and none of the already loose reliability that comes with having an actual employer. And I think that also speaks to – it connects back to what Rob was saying around like, hey, where is this happening around you know, the world in which the – where are people not caring? And one of the places where we know that happens is inside of gig economy jobs is what happens, the way in which Uber has turned its back on sexual misconduct allegations around its drivers and kind of washes its hands often. And it's a very similar thing here in a sense, right? It's like when you disclaim the responsibility, when you say like this person isn't an employee of mine, then what happens under your nose is not your responsibility either. And I think that there's a through line there between that and the stuff that we see in the game space around young workers who are trying to find a way in to the industry, young streamers hoping to make a big break. They are also precarious in a similar way, which is to say that they are replaceable, that they are not being treated as humans, obviously, and that they have to move into dangerous places in order to try to basically like make it happen, make their careers happen, find livelihoods, go to these events where there's lots of alcohol, I want to be 100% clear, Gita, you and I both brought up the alcohol thing earlier. I want to make sure that we're 100% clear. We're not saying that you shouldn't be allowed to drink or that it's your fault for being drunk or anything like that.
So make it incontrovertible that is not with the people that organize these events and then don't have non-alcoholic drink options or don't organize at a daytime event where alcohol will not be as prevalent. There needs to be some variety. This has been an issue. This is an issue across culture. Mm-hmm. Our drinking culture is super. Once you stop drinking, you have an understanding of how much people drink, and it is very different from how you felt when you were drinking, mm-hmm. especially if you were an alcoholic and you were drinking all the time. Yeah. So now my just awareness of like not being able to get a Diet Coke is very, very strong.
Fair. And it's worth saying again, like one of the ways in which this is very clear is, I don't know the exact order of operations here, but from my read, this kicks off with the Cards Against Humanity stuff last week, which actually starts as allegations around racism and around the ways in which that office and Max Temkin specifically, treated some black workers there and the ways in which they were, you know, not just poorly treated, but not given a lot of credibility, not being given the ability to help shape that workplace in the way that would make them comfortable. Their issues had been dismissed. Further reporting ended up connecting that eventually to some elements of the ways in which rape culture had infected Cards Against Humanity. There's a great long form feature from Nicole Carpenter over
really
Polygon,
good reporting.
Called Former Employees Accused Cards Against Humanity of Racist and Sexist Office Culture, that includes a clear allegation that like that Cards Against Humanity workers were not allowed to include content like punching at rape culture in their game because of allegations that Max Temkin had committed rape. Which, by the way, briefly, as someone who's done a live event with Max Temkin, one, fuck Max Temkin. Two, and you can go to Twitter to see, like, I talked about this the other day, but like, I'm sorry that I ever did an event with that motherfucker. I very much felt like I was in a place where I couldn't step back when I did that event and wish I had realized that it was in my power to have a conversation with my employees or my employers at the time. I was at Giant Bomb, which Patrick, I know you've been through this too. But I wish I had had that conversation. I wish I had said, wait a second, I don't feel comfortable about this. I know. But instead, what I did is I looked around at my bosses and I looked around at the people at Giant Bomb who I trusted and said, like, well,
Do I want to try to raise this? Am I in a position where I can safely raise this? This is my first. I've only been here a few months. They seem to like not have this issue and they're good on everything else. Is this, and instead I should have trusted my gut. And then, you know, a year later I wasn't there and I stopped doing events with that dude. You know, I got booked. Someone booked me for an event in at a PAX Unplugged, a couple of years ago. And like a week and a half before the event, I got an email to like everyone on the panel, and Max was just on the panel, and no one had told me. And I was like, "Hello, no, I can't do this. I'm not going to go to this panel. I have to pull out of this event." And there is another thing to think about in this industry is like when there is someone who has allegations, think about the ways in which you continue to platform them. Think about the ways in which you continue to give them cover, because if you don't find yourself, if you're not able to hold yourself accountable in that way and have those difficult conversations and make those separations, then what you're going to end up doing is providing cover for the people in the industry who are going to continue potentially to do harassment and assault and abuse. But also you're going to send a message to survivors that their stories don't actually matter to you. And I know that I did that when I did that event at Giant Bomb in like 2015 or whatever. And I apologize for that. And hope that people understand that like that was a bad mistake. And I've done my best to right the ship since.
And you know, I put out a statement sort of trying to speak towards cleaning up your own house in the past as well. I mean, I, you know, in the statement that I put out, you know, I looked around, I wasn't close enough to Max to be like, I should make a meeting with him and we should talk through his allegations and I need you to explain yourself to me. I looked to others that were around him that seemed to be those types of people, and you know, it was a slightly different era back then, but not enough to throw that under the rug. But I looked around myself and thought, well, these people must have had those conversations. And so I guess we're all just going to keep going. And I privately made my peace with not feeling comfortable with that. Never had the conversation over it, but just made my decision on how I felt personally. And then when this all came up again, you know, it can seem and is convenient to bring that up publicly now, and deservedly will take criticism for that seeming and being convenient. But I also think it's incumbent upon folks that have partaken in that convenience in the past, whether they've done so privately and not publicly, is to reckon with that. And that was a public figure that associated with Max and Cards in the past. And however I tried to make my peace privately, like, it is important to not just make those strides going forward, but acknowledge where you could have done better in the past. And so I can't make up for those mistakes in the past. I can only attempt to explain how I arrived at it. But, you know, I think the hope is learning from where you could have done better, expecting audiences to keep you accountable, and, you know, trying to do best by victims going forward.
Totally. There are a million other accusations about specific individuals, but I it's probably worth saying here that, like, to some degree, and this is me speaking about my experience when I was there as an editor, and not just as a podcast host, because I'm at this point not dealing with whatever the day-to-day is, you know, on your side of things, y'all. But my understanding from that time is that there are degrees to which we cannot safely talk about some particular allegations while investigations are ongoing, or until certain conversations internally happen around what the right language is to use about public allegations. Is that,
or
is
while
that
fair? If we're actively reporting a story, it could potentially impact that investigation to speak of it while you're in the process of researching, talking to victims, talking to the accused. It gets really complicated when that becomes like a pretty, unfortunately, regular beat for this line of work.
Yeah. And I know that some of that investigation is ongoing, and it's probably worth saying that there, you can make no promises about that, the content of those investigations, like, coming to light necessarily. I think everyone on this call has done one of these investigations at some point. Kato has not. Sorry, Kato.
Unless Kato's been around while we've done that. And is aware of our frustrations.
That you can sometimes report out a story and it doesn't see the light of day, and it's the most frustrating thing in the world.
And not just like, oh, I've talked to a couple people, like, go all the way to rewriting it multiple times for multiple people, for multiple audiences, and get all the way to what feels like the finish line for another story, and it can still fall apart. These stories are extremely difficult to get through the process of journalism, and specifically legal departments.
Yes.
And so
which are notoriously risk averse.
Yeah. And like you should hold journalistic institutions more accountable to make it part of their beat. I think that has changed a lot in the last 5 years specifically. There's always more that can be done. Also understand to some degree that even when those reporters do their work, they can run into roadblocks internally that then you can't even speak about. So you're not even able to acknowledge that you tried to do the work, and where you came up short was maybe out of your control, because you can't even acknowledge that you did the work in the first place, because doing so would in some ways be litigious against the individual.
Uh-huh.
So it's
frustrating sometimes. That's all. Yeah. Rob, you leaned forward in your chair as if you'd arrived at a point.
No, I was thinking about a couple aspects of abuse cases like this. Is a lot of times workplace abuse isn't clear as day. It is contextual. It is about intonation. It is about, for lack of a better word, a vibe. And there are a lot of stories that people have that, if you tell them to a very skeptical audience, the reaction might be like, oh, that doesn't sound like anything. Except you had to have been in the room, right? Or you have to have heard someone do something in that tone before, or behave in that certain way to really get
it. Or there's a pattern. Or there's, you don't understand, this happens every fucking week. This happens after every meeting. Or you've forgotten little instances that in the moment had built up and contributed to an entire kind of campaign of harassment, and not just a single, you know, this is not just a single thing or even just one element that repeats. There are often lots of little smaller micro versions of it.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm sure there are people that are listening that only realize that the workplace situation they were in was abusive or toxic until after they left the job and got a new job where things were really, really different and like better and less tense. And you suddenly had this realization that something you got used to wasn't necessarily normal or healthy, or really in many cases just should have been different.
Yeah.
I think the other part is one of the things that is particularly endemic to the games industry is just a culture of secrecy. And this goes to the basic, like, how does the games industry share news about itself?
Yeah.
With just massive, we will own your life embargoes on just routine information. I swear to God, if you show one of these screenshots one day early, we'll fucking kill you. That's kind
if
of
you,
how
if
the-
If you sign this NDA for this massive upcoming game, you need to beat the game in order to review it. Definitely not an embargo that we signed last year.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So
don't talk about the Claymore. It's fine.
But I think that extends. But I think that extends to every aspect of how business is conducted in this industry.
Yes.
And like, it's been a while since I've worked outside this industry, so I don't know how aggressive and comprehensive NDAs are. My understanding is these things have become pretty much standard features of a lot of landscapes, like non-competes, which are very anti-worker, very like pro-manager, but they are becoming kind of endemic across a lot of different industries, even in places where they don't make any sense. But that's neither here nor there. But the thing I want to emphasize is a lot of people telling these stories, just having walked in the door to a place of work, have already been obligated on day one when they're filling out their basic contact information, insurance information. They've also probably signed something that says, hey, what happens in the family stays in the family,
mm-hmm.
under like pain of law. Like you don't tell stories out of school. And so
an ironic comparison, since, of course, schools also do that exact thing.
Yeah.
Or an apropos comparison, rather.
Yeah. And so I think the other part of this is so many things that happen in the workplace to tell those stories requires the accusers themselves exposing themselves to massive legal risk. And so, you know, it becomes a really frustratingly difficult thing to get a fair hearing on, because so many people who could corroborate, or so many people who have accusations, are at very real and severe legal peril if their identity is unmasked as an accuser, as they reveal themselves as one of the people telling these stories. And so this is why I think the sort of surprise people have of how many stories like this are there. The industry is constructed in a way that the number of stories like this could be infinite. Right. Yeah. Like the way these workplaces are constructed, the terms of employment people have as a matter of course in this industry is like a perfect climate for endemic abuse. And
when you think about one of the ways there are lots of folks that will speak to having essentially what they call like blank resumes, which is that so if you don't stay through the completion of a project, or if a project gets canceled, like the work you did may be under an NDA and you can't even show your work when you get to look for another job. And so let's say you were harassed at a studio and decided you wanted to move on. You may not even be able to show the work that you did to prove that you were good at your job at the next job, thus creating scenarios where people stay in abusive, toxic situations simply so they can have a resume that allows them to escape later.
Yeah.
And this was just dropped in the motherboard, the tech Slack. And like this is another way in which workplaces are constructed so that victims are encouraged not to speak out. This is about WeWork, like a very obvious example of a really unhealthy and toxic workplace. So WeWork's first whistleblower recalls the unsettling feeling from her first Thank God It's Monday meeting. After hearing Adam Newman speak, attendees hit a gong and chanted, "WeWork, WeWork." Yeah, it's not always quite so explicit, but like when some development studios, they do outwardly say have this ethos of we're all a family.
Yeah.
And you know, and like as soon as you get into that way of thinking about your place of work, it's like your job is a place that you go to earn money in order to pay your rent and buy groceries, right? A job is a job. And as much as you love your job, a job is a job. It's a job. And you should not treat it as if it is your family, because the way that you resolve conflict within a family is very different from the way you resolve conflict within a job in a workplace. And a lot of the time, especially in industries that are related to arts or entertainment, they will prey on your desire to be in the industry, your passion, or your desire to be part of a studio that has a level of prestige. It's not always going to be as obvious as hitting a gong and chanting WeWork, but it can be pernicious in other ways that discourage victims from speaking out about people that they perceive as being in power.
And it's worth saying, without getting into any deeper details, because this stuff is very, very heavy and dark, that like the family comparison is neither incorrect, nor is it as like clean as I think those businesses think that they want to make it. I cannot speak to other people. There have been sexual assaults and sexual misconduct inside of my family, meaning that I don't trust lots of people in my family. that happens. That is not a thing that like is off the table. And in fact, the thing that happens is you treat it like a family. When people treat it like a family issue, what that really means is justice doesn't get to happen, and victims don't get to heal and are expected to just like suck it up and deal with it because it's so-and-so and it's that person. It's this person. You know who they are. You don't want to ruin their life. You're da 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 da. And the fact that companies make that comparison so often is strangely and terribly apt in many cases, and like is not reassuring to me. It is the least assuring thing in the world to me when a company says that, for both of those reasons, because it means they're going to ask more of you day to day in terms of what your work is. They're not necessarily going to pay you more. They're going to leverage an emotional attribute over you. They're going to say that this is about your love for your family. It's about your love for your team. And listen, I love y'all. I love working with y'all. But like, it ain't like that. Like, there's, you know what I mean? It ain't.
No, I feel you.
And frankly, it's not like that for me. Like, I love my family, but I'm not gonna help you cover up an injustice. Like, it's just we have to move past that model of family when it comes to crimes like that, and not just crimes. When it comes, because often abuse is not criminal, but it's still abuse, and that is an important aspect of this too, which is like extra complicated as stories continue to come out and you try to figure out like, what is this? What happened here? You have to get out of your head that like, oh, this isn't a crime and therefore this person shouldn't be held accountable. You know, in any case, this has been happening a lot. The stories are going to continue to come out. We're going to continue to cover it on the site. I know people are reporting stuff out, but also just as they develop, expect more stories to hit the site over the next couple of days and week. You know, maybe we wrap back around and talk about this some more.
Yeah, we didn't get a chance more, to, at least we can probably leave it here and not get into all the different statements that the various, you know, Twitch has made a statement, Insomniac made a statement, Ubisoft's made a, you know, a statement. Yeah. I'd be curious in a week where all this stuff lands, because the legitimate fear, because this is often what happens, is that it's very easy to, you know, oust the one public person that, you know, receipts were delivered on social media. And that person is, if not, maybe not even fired, but is temporarily suspended pending an investigation. And you know, what doesn't solve this issue is taking care of individual bad actors. I mean, that's important, you know, to provide some measure of justice and peace to those, to the victims. But it's, well, how did we get arrive in this situation in the first place? Was it purely just a single person, a single act, and not reflective of a culture or a system? Because if all you do is remove the one bad actor, they can just be replaced later by someone else, or the system can produce another bad situation. And so, unfortunately, that's like not, you know, it's not, companies are going to be unwilling to disclose that stuff because it keeps, they have to be then accountable for the things that they are promising, right? Like, you know, I mean, Twitch did just put out a statement sort of responding to what's going on, but it's, there's just enough specific so that they're going to get a pass, but not enough specificity that, you know, you can feel completely great about. And that's going to require, that's why these waves will happen again, because you have to keep pounding the table in order to, for change to occur, especially when you lack, you know, unions don't solve everything, but it's at least representation. And it can start a path towards a, you know, more just system for the workers.
Yeah. Before we go to break, I guess just one final thing is just to say, just to reiterate that to survivors and victims out there, anyone who's dealt with this, we believe you. We stand by you. We support you in your struggle, whether or not you feel like now is the moment to come forward with your story or not. You know, we stand with you on that. And thank you for your support as we struggle to talk through stuff that none of us have been, you know, specifically trained for. We do our best, and we hope that provides some context and some clarity and some analysis. But we know that you know, likewise, this cannot be the end of the thing, cannot be us talking about it on a podcast. So, you know, keep fighting, keep struggling for change. And we will be right back. Kato, wait, did you have something?
I mean, I was just gonna, I wanted to quickly say that I've seen some people noticing that this time around, it feels like there's a lot less wagons circling, at least publicly, especially in the streamer stuff, which is great. But also, I think the point has to be prevention. Like, we want that to never have gotten through those people who associated with the abusers in the first place. Like, it should stop earlier. Then it's great that they're not, that these people are being, you know, shunned by their, like, other by the people that associated with them once, but we have to push for it to, you know, stop much before it happens, obviously.
Agreed. Yeah, I think the reaction from communities is different from it was, say, like a year ago. There is just definitely a lot more outward vocal support for the victims, and absolutely, like, definitely shunning from other people in the community. But yeah, and if we've made this stride, we can make the next stride, which is to think about how we make our community safer.
Totally. All right, we will be right back.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
We'll be right back.
All right, we are back, and we are back to talk about video games. Video games. Patrick, you've been gone so long, and I have to imagine you've been carrying a baby around the whole time, like Lone Wolf and Cub style.
Probably fighting for a while, bandits. You could do it with one hand. It was incredible.
Yeah,
I could.
Like a pizza pie.
It was
I was thinking Maurice safe. He's holding a shot put.
You know what? Kato, you're actually right. Yes, it did feel a little bit more like, how far could I throw this child? Pretty far. The upper arm strength is not my one of the traits I would brag by, but this baby is tiny. It's 6 pounds is not a lot of weight.
And you could just spiral it like a football.
Put your fingers on the shoulder blades, to get a good.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, you could. You could get a full grip
on it. I hate that we walked down this. Why did I bring us here? Patrick loves his child.
Bigger, and you can't do that anymore. Mm. 10 pounds is a little tougher to. Feels like more like it'd be thrown in a pound of flesh, and that's not a same.
A shot put has to be hot heavier than 10 pounds. Come on. I just have no idea.
Yeah, gaming was so 16 pounds. I went out of my way to try and like distance myself from everything about work and my work habits and work culture because I've spent 20 years, I don't think I've done that.
Fuck.
Actually, in more than 20 years, I've spent. It's funny, I recently finally got a financial advisor. We're going through some things. The story will make sense in a second. One of the things I had to sort out was to turn this investment fund from when I was a kid and put it in my name. It was in like a junior account, like because it was started by my parents, but it was in my name because. When I first started writing and getting paid for writing, is when I wrote for Gaming Age, which originally had the Gaming Age forums, which became NeoGAF. Yes. And I was getting a monthly check based on the ad revenue back when, oh my God, like websites just made so much money off of ads. And I was getting something like, I don't know, like $500 a month. And my parents were like, you're 14. Like, the fuck are you going to do with $500 a month? And so they said, we're taking away 3/4 of it, which still left me at 14 with,
flush
$150
with,
bucks.
Just, like, that's a lot of money.
Video games I wanted, I still worked summer jobs because I wanted to hang out with my friends. But like I had like all the fun money that I really needed. And they put it all away in there. And so when I went to go change it into my name and take my parents' names off of it, they said, it's funny. So normally we would need to like have you send in a birth certificate, like explain exactly how old you are because this was established when you're underage. And we're so close to being able to just automatically turn the page on it because your account is 20 years old. And so we mathematically would not have to prove that you're 21 because the account would be 21 years old in 3 or 4 months. So instead I still had to send it in. But it's just all to show like, I've been thinking about writing about games. It's been like directly tied to my identity for 20 years now. And like to my like not just my identity of like, oh, I write for fun, but like, oh, that's how I make money. This is how I will sustain myself. This is how I'll support a family. And it's just so hard for me to turn it off. I've gotten better about working 9 to 5 and like shutting it down, but I still play games at night. And I'm always thinking about, well, how can I turn that into a blog or a piece I can work on? And I try to take it really seriously during this period, like I'm going to not do that. And the curious thing was I was very good at that. I started watching lots of movies. That was like, I was like, okay, the time that I would normally spend playing a video game, I'm going to watch movies. So I'd go on Amazon Prime. They have a great selection of VHS covers. For what I mean by that is like when you used to go to like a Blockbuster or whatever your local chain was, this movie is probably dog shit, but man, this has a cool ass cover and I want to see that movie. And that drove my viewing habits was this is a cool cover. I'm going to watch this movie called Slugs about killer slugs naming people, which was actually much better than I expected. Slugs, The Nest, go look at my Letterboxd profile. I started reviewing those as I went through them. No, they just eat them. They just eat you. They're
damn.
Just
okay.
Just really deadly slugs, radiated, the typical thing. And the best part about it is, the one good thing about algorithms, it was like, yo, you watch some dog shit? We have more dog shit for you. And so I went down this path. But then what I found was that I got to such a disconnected place with video games that I found myself wanting to play them, not because it was going to serve any sort of content function. I didn't have to do it to make money. I was sort of set for the next 3 months. But because I, for the first time in 20 years, find myself in a place where, oh, like I could just play a video game and experience it the way that like a lot of normal people do that don't have their brains corrupted by content, is like I would find, so when I started playing Gears Tactics, a game that I tired of like mechanically about 15 hours in, but played the full like 30, 35 hours, because I would sit down after such a stressful day with my kids where I cannot take them anywhere. I have none of the tools that are normally available to a parent to deal with a lot of the stresses of having kids on a daily basis. They can't see their friends. They can't see their family. They can't go to the park. They can't go to the pool. Like every day that it would rain, I would like want to curl up into a ball and cry because it was like, oh great. So now we can't even fucking go outside. We're stuck inside all day. And what I'd find like around like 7, 8 o'clock where my wife would like go and call some family and she's like, let's sit down and watch a movie or something when I get back. I'd have like an hour where I could like have a beer and I would play Gears Tactics and I would feel all the stress in my body go away. Like for an hour, I was like, and I would like, I could chemically feel it happen. It was like so strange because this does not happen to me. It's not happening to me now playing Last of Us. Like, nope, back to thinking about this game as like, what can I do with this product and how does it fit into my workflow? Like there was this brief moment where like I would go from like a complete stress ball and I would just feel it all wipe away. And that was very cool for 3 months. I'll never experience it again. That was interesting. But it was just such a weird, my relationship with games completely changed for that 3 months. I only played a handful of games. I played Final Fantasy, beat Gears Tactics, and started on Last of Us was basically all I did. And then otherwise watched TV and movies with my wife. But it was a profoundly strange experience to experience games in such a profoundly different way.
What did you like it?
Like that way?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, no, like the game? Game. I mean, it sounds like you loved the way. Fantastic.
That sounds great.
I would love to go.
I'll chase that dragon for the rest of my life and never find it. But you have to have another kid to have that time off. And no, thank you. I thought Gears Tactics looked like really good for 15 hours. Okay. And then it's just a lot
for another 25
filler. Loved the mechanics. The story is non-existent. It's dog shit. Just may as well not exist. And it also had no meta, which made the filler stuff all the more like frustrating because there was no reason to go do the same mission you've done 30 times because it wasn't even servicing like a research project,
right,
or anything. But it's a really good foundation. I would tell people to go, if you like XCOM, you know, Gears Tactics is a really good fit. Just if you run out of steam on it, it's okay. Put it down. Don't play any more of it. I was fine playing more of it.
But if they make Gears Tactics 2, that game's going to rule.
It's gonna be fucking amazing because they've already done a lot of the hard work. And I think not that the meta stuff isn't difficult, but it's mechanically in voice with XCOM, but different enough that I really enjoyed the difference between the two. Really excited to see what they do with a sequel or even like a broad expansion if they did that before a sequel, because they did a lot of the hard work of the foundation. You know, I always played a lot of those games with the sniper classes, and I of course still fell into that habit in Gears Tactics, but by the nature of the mechanics, it really wants you to get in close, and that just created a dynamic that I'm just not used to in a lot of those games and found it really, really satisfying.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you get to play something the way normal people play things. I guess
what a curiosity.
It is. It's strange. I'm trying that right now with Divinity Original Sin 2, which I think we've talked about this series a little bit. Patrick, I know you loved the first one.
That was so right before the pandemic happened.
Yeah.
There is this tragic shared note that my wife and I had, which was all the movies and TV shows we were. So having a second kid, obviously it's its own challenges and stressors, but that time you get off is actually like a vacation, because a newborn kid just doesn't do anything. They whine, they poop, they pee, but like relative to a more like a 4-year-old, they just don't do anything. Like you can sit around all day. Like I haven't binged a show in 4 years. You can do that with a newborn. So we had this shared note, which was like Succession and like all these other shows we're gonna like catch up on and watch. Pandemic happens. Kids aren't going to daycare.
Right.
Like there's no one to help us. Like, note deleted. Don't even keep it for like thinking about what we'll watch in the future. Just delete it. Just fucking burn that note. And simultaneously,
that world is closed to us.
When we had Jessica, I have such fond memories of it was the first time in a long time, like playing a game long enough that I was like, I've done enough today. I need to do something else. Because I burned through the two DLCs for The Witcher 3 and had a great time doing it. I would just hold Jessica in my arms and give my wife the day off. And I was just like, I'm just going to sit here. She's going to sleep in these arms for 6 hours straight. I'll get this controller propped up and I'll
walk
be good.
Walk through these vineyards. Talk to this devil.
And Original Sin 2 was the game. It was like that. And I was that in between Death Stranding. I was trying to figure out which one was going to be that game because they both fit the bill of like chill, like relaxed, like games I could not have to put a lot of my back to play. And fucking, I'm never going to play Original Sin 2. I've just moved on to Baldur's Gate. Like,
yeah,
it's just, that,
yeah.
That's why no I jumped back into this. Back.
They did that Baldur's Gate, not trailer, but like live gameplay session.
The early access starts in like a month.
Yeah,
right?
It's soon. Yeah, and I may just keep myself from playing it early access because
I'm going to do the same thing.
Yeah, I should wait until it's out. So with Divinity Original Sin 1, I played it when it came out. Didn't love the tone. Didn't love the jokiness. Didn't love the like storytelling and the place. And that's like a lot for me. It turns out
not a short game.
It's also huge, right? So it was like, oh, I'm going to be in this.
Hours.
I got to like the weird out of space and time meta world, like library thing.
You were right near the end then, too.
No. I mean, the first time you go to the tutorial area, you realize you go to this place. It's like one of the first times you teleport, and I'm like, I'm going to be stuck with this tone for 60 hours. It's going to be this sort of writing for 60 hours.
And if the mechanics
hours.
Were not enough to carry you through, right. then you were not going to... The mechanics so then, were enough to carry me through,
right.
but not, well, so I, then can this, see, I didn't like the story either.
Yeah, the second time, the second game comes out, play it in early access. I'm like, okay, this is kind of interesting, but like I feel like I should wait until it comes out. It comes out, and I'm just not in the right place for it. And now I'm playing it, and I'm, you know, I think I'm like 30 hours in. I'm still on the first island.
Are you Skeleton Boy?
I'm not. So I'm playing one. I'm playing multiple. I am Skeleton Boy also, because you get to play as, you get to, all those characters can come in your party for the first act.
Right.
I think you get to keep most of them. Which is
a lot, right? It's like you can pick from like 12 main characters.
There's six main characters plus you can create a character wholesale. Those six characters all have their own backstories, their own like quest lines and stuff. It's almost like you're picking between like BioWare companion characters, but you could just
I remember, I went through the character screen in the Switch version, and you can like also like pick a character but reject their backstory.
Yes,
right?
You could be like, yeah, I basically want to be this person, or I want to be a lizard guy like this guy, but
I don't care about their history.
Guy.
I'm gonna start
I'm gonna
over.
Do whatever the
which
fuck
is such
I want.
A cool
yeah,
choice.
Totally. We're like, you can be like an undead dwarf if that's what you want, even though that's not one of the like. All right, yeah, sure, okay, fuck it, let's go. So I'm playing with a friend, which helps a lot. One, just because like it's cool to have someone else. It's changed the way I've had to play it a little bit, because in an RPG normally I'm very much like pull up the map, clear every little spot by myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I'm still doing that, but it almost is just like I've given up a little bit of control. If someone wants to go have a conversation and get into a fight, if my partner wants to go do that, like, go for it. Awesome. And then if...
How does it communicate what's going on? Are you
there's
just
like a little icon
other?
That pops up that's like, this person's in a conversation
Your
right
friend
now.
Is Click fucking
on
shit up at a camp down the street.
Well, normally what happens is I hear, can you come over here?
And because, I lit someone on fire, right, and now there are seven people on fire.
Well, normally what happens is I walk into a place, I have to be like, ah, shit. I forgot these people hate me. I'm going to not move. Can you come over here? Because what it does is it freezes the tactical battle, and the other player can still explore the world while a tactical battle is happening in one corner. And if they come into the area, it slips into tactical battle mode.
Oh,
basically.
That's great.
It's really good, because it's just like, I'm just going to chill. You can come through. It's fine. The way that combat works is just so good. I've like totally fallen in love with it. the elemental interaction stuff. So for people who don't know, like, it's a game that is, it's a tactical RPG that doesn't have tiles and instead has just kind of free, like, meter-based movement where you're going like, hey, every one action point you spend, you can move up to 5 meters. And you're doing your best to kind of line up ability combos. Very early basic ones are like, this attack is like you raise some rock out of the ground and throw it and it lands on the ground. And then when it hits, there's oil there. And then you can follow that up with a fire attack that sets the oil on fire and damages people. But then, like, there is a ton of additional interactions on top of that, the way things stack in different ways. So, like, you can use an ice spell that chills someone, but if you chill someone who's already chilled, they're frozen, and that means that they lose their turn, right? And so you're doing all of these things, plus making sure your characters aren't getting hit by them. And in multiplayer, it's really fun because, one, it's almost like there's a degree of the Legolas Gimli stuff of like, all right, I'm gonna check this shit out, motherfucker. Let me show you what a good turn looks like. But there's also a degree of like, there is also a degree of like comboing with someone else. And it's there's a little extra joy that comes. It reminds me of tabletop role-playing games in which you say like, oh, can you burn through this guy's magic armor? I got something that's going to knock him the fuck out if you can get his armor down on this turn. And then you kind of like hand over that control, and being able to hand over that control. Like,
because it's really fundamentally good. No different than just controlling another character, but it's because there's the added element of another person.
Yes.
Well, they might do something that I didn't expect, or maybe I didn't fully communicate what I wanted them to do.
Oh my God.
So it's a little bit out of your control.
That skeleton dude. So I'm controlling the skeleton dude and the lizard guy, the red prince and Fane. And Fane, the undead dude, undead characters in this game heal from poison, right? And they get hurt. It's classic, like, old school good rules. Healing magic hurts them, right? And poison heals them. And he has a move called Contaminate, which turns any surface that could be contaminated by poison into poison. So water or blood specifically. And that means that there are times when I'm like, he's real hurt. I got to heal him. Like, I know you have that elf assassin lady hanging out in this blood with me, but also there's two other enemies in here and I need to heal. So I'm just going to hit that contaminate button, turn this blood pool into a poison pool, heal myself and poison everyone else. Or, you know, the good version of that is like, yo, can you raise your physical armor so that you won't get caught by this poison or whatever. You know what I mean?
Right.
But that the way those abilities interact is very fun and almost slapsticky. I'm really enjoying it, and also I think the writing is better straight through. Like, I think that, like, there's some character stuff that I can hold on to. It's still goofy. It's still a funny game. It's still a fairly, like, lighthearted thing. It's just it pivots really quickly between, you know, very jokey. You know, you can talk to animals if you get a certain ability, and the animals are all like. Like, there's a drunk cat that follows you around in the first area for the first, like, 12 hours of the game. There's this black cat that follows you. And if you have the pet talk ability, it's just drunk. It's just like, hey, so bud, are you okay?
It follows you regardless of whether you can talk?
Yes. Dude.
That's so fun. I just think that's like a...
We were save scumming to keep this cat alive. You have no fucking idea. We get to this, like, boss fight against this maniacal, like, torturer stereotype dude who's, like, very vain and vaguely queer. Coded in a way that's like, what's going on here? But he's like a big boss fight. He's like the big boss fight of one of the ways you get out of this prison that you're in at the start of the game. And this cat had followed us into the dungeon. Again, had been with us the entire time, hadn't died. And I'd heard that you get a reward if you manage to escape the prison with the cat. So the last fight, I'm like, okay, this fight is this like maniacal magic torturer plus all of these corpse zombie, like, they're like cursed monks or silent monks, which are basically like he's taken people and Frankenstein them into his personal, like, military slaves. And they get in their head that cat is on our side. No one has ever directly attacked this fucking cat before, but these monks are straight up, like, doing overhand, like, axe handle chops on this cat. And I'm like, you have got to leave. I had to teleport the cat out of danger, like, to the back line behind us all, spent a healing spell on this cat. The reward is very good, by the way. We beat that fight. We got out with the cat. We did have to save scum a few times. There were times that, like, the cat got caught in an AOE, or the cat was maybe a little too close to a fire spell or something. And we get out, and then the cat, I don't know what the cat, I don't have the pet talk skill, so the cat was just like meow, and then left, and then it was
you didn't have it.
I didn't have it. I don't know what it said.
How'd you know it was drunk?
Well, oh, because one of my, okay, one of the characters that you get had it, Ifan, and I, when he was in the party, I talked to the cat finally, but I got rid of him. He's not in my party anymore, so I don't know what the final conversation was. When I talked to him in the middle of it, the cat was like just bumbling around, slurring its words, drunk. And so finally I get out of the sewer and the cat just like, meow, and then leaves. And then it's like, you feel like you've made a deep and personal connection to something beyond this world or something like that. And I learned a new skill, which was like summon the black cat familiar. And now I can summon a cat familiar that can jump really far, like to the top of a 30-foot tower, and then switch places with me. So I have a new traversal ability that like lets me move around the world. It's worth sick. It. It's so, yeah, it was absolutely worth it. And like that shit, and like that shit is the shit you can use in combat, right? Like I definitely use that familiar to jump me really far. Cause my character is like a big bulky lizard knight guy. But this cat is really fast. And this cat was very good at like swerving past enemies, jumping to the back line where their wizards are, and then switching places with me so I can just tear them up.
Oh, that's sick. That's a wrecker.
Yeah, and that's the game. And that's like, that story is the game. And I'm really enjoying it. I'm playing it. I'm doing my best to play it the way you were saying you were playing Gears Tactics, which is like, I'm not going to do an 8-hour session because I have to talk about it on a podcast. I'm going to play like 3 hours a night, 2 hours a night. I'm like, hey, do you want to play some Divinity tonight? Cool. Okay, let's do that. And that is way better than trying to just like mainline it for coverage. And
I've heard that series in general, that you probably would have enjoyed the first one a lot more had you done it
multiplayer. Yeah, almost certainly. That, right. Know,
I played Original Sin solo, really enjoyed it, really loved that game, and I'm sure I would like Original Sin 2 even more. But I have heard that it is like, if you can play it co-op, it is just so enhanced by all. And Baldur's Gate 3 is also going
to
be co-op.
It's going to be co-op out the gate. Yeah, I want more than anything to watch Vinny Caravella play that game multiplayer with someone. More than anything. More than, that's the only content for me, baby. So that's what I've been playing. Other people digging into stuff this week?
I've been playing so much Hades in between packing. Actually in between packing this time, not just in between pretending to pack or thinking about packing. So I thought that the final update that brought it into 1.0 was happening this week, but I was wrong.
I was so happy because that meant not another game for me to play because I've been putting off Hades. And you said 1.0 and I was like, oh no, I have to play Hades now.
Yeah, no, it's later this year they're going to do 1.0. This is just the last major content update before that. I'm sure there's going to be other little fixes between then and now, but they on their roadmap, it's just this is the road to 1.0 now. So at some point in 2020, we're going to see it on 1.0, they're saying. But like there's a lot of good shit in this game. I also have finally made it to the Elysium Fields and made it pretty far in Elysium, actually. I feel very, very powerful. But the new content update adds some stuff with Charon. Now there's an optional boss fight with the Charon, who is the boatman who takes the dead souls to the underworld. Here, he also sells items in a shop. Now you can steal from him and have an optional boss fight. Haven't tried that one yet. It also added some new sprite work for some of the underworld characters, like Achilles and Eurydice, who is the character I just met. I really like her. I think she's great. The ways that in which this game does mythology jokes is really tickling my fancy here. The boss fight that I keep dying on, it's really hard. In Elysium Fields, you meet the Minotaur, and he tells you he's a great character. That boss fight's also really hard. I haven't been able to beat him. I just have run the timer out on that fight and he leaves. He tells you, oh, I'm a tough character, but wait until you meet the champion of Elysium, and you're like, who could it be? It's not the Minotaur from the labyrinth. Like that would be my pick. No, several stages later, you get to the boss fight, and it is Theseus and the Minotaur. They're friends now.
Shout out to them. I'm glad they worked it out.
Yeah, honestly, I guess when you're dead, you don't have a lot to do other than squash some beef.
Yeah.
So works out. The funniest thing is Theseus is styled after like a traditional like American style superhero. So he's constantly talking
That's
about how
funny.
He will vanquish you and, you know, how he will not get away with it this time, you evil foe. It's very, he's such a dick. Every time I come back, he's always talking about how much better than me he is. And I hate him. I love him, but I hate him. But there's one thing I met a character last night, Austin, that I really, really wanted to share with you added a new level of love for me for this game. So this boy is Thanatos.
Oh, great.
Thanatos.
Why is he a hot Bishonen boy?
Well, he's got some real tension with Zagreus.
I bet.
He showed up in Elysium really upset that we didn't say goodbye to him.
Wow. Incredible. That's a good hook.
Oh God! And then when I he helped us clear some enemies actually. And so when I lost that run to Theseus and the Minotaur, I went back to the House of Hades. He was there, and he was so pissed. He was like, "I risked everything helping you, and you still died. I can't believe you." And it's just me last night at 1:30 a.m. I was just like, "Please kiss, please kiss, please kiss."
God, I scrolled down on this Hades wiki page and there's a romance subheading, so you know.
You better
work on reaching maximum affinity with this boy.
Oh my God. Just like he's clearly deliberately designed to evoke this reaction, and I really love this boy.
I'm letting you know. If you want to date this boy, you can date this boy.
I really do. I want Zagreus to make up with him at least. They're just like, it's clear that they really feel something for each other. I had him try to start to make up with Meg also. I now have been reliably not just beating Megara, but also her other fury sisters, Tisiphone and Electo. And those are rough boss fights, Tisiphone especially.
Bro, I would not date one of the fury sisters. No. I feel like
number
you're...
Number one, breaking up with them? I don't know about that. Number two, that's just a lot of drama, it feels like.
It's a lot of them. I feel like there's you're just going to get dragged for every little thing you do. They're real sticklers.
Yeah.
Historically speaking.
It just feels like if you date one, you are de facto kind of also dating the other two. Just like a lot of family
drama. There's a lot of drama.
Just going to get in trouble. Yeah. Thanatos, I feel like he's got his own shit going on, but at least it's not like he cares about you or anything.
Okay, is that the vibe? Is that the vibe?
Yeah, that's totally the vibe. Great. It's very, very, it's fun to see how they fit, like, figures from Greek mythology into tropes of modern media, right? So the thing that's going on between Orpheus and Eurydice is Orpheus... So we meet Eurydice. She hangs out in Asphodel, and she gives us items that upgrade our boons, which is really, really handy and helpful. She sings a really beautiful song that's on the soundtrack. Again, they're working with the same composer they've worked with for all the other games, so the music is fantastic. A real folk metal tinge on the soundtrack. It really whips. The stuff in Elysium has all these really great like bass lines that are just going for a walk. I love it. And... She's lovely. We mentioned to her that we met Orpheus, and she was like, oh, that bitch, that little dumbass bitch who hasn't even said hello to me now that we're both in the underworld. Tell him I said, hey, I guess. So their whole like dynamic now is Orpheus does not want to ruin his memory of Eurydice from when he lost her because he spent his whole life mourning that memory. So he has expressed to us that he does not really want to see her at all because he is too wrapped up in his own sadness of having lost her. The myth of Orpheus and Eurydice being Orpheus journey to the underworld to get Eurydice, his wife, back after she died, and he was told that as long as he never looked back, she would follow him out of the underworld. And just before they made it to the living world, he lost his faith for 1 second and looked back, saw her, and saw that she was going to be damned to being dead instead of being alive again. So it's really funny to think about, okay, but what happens after Orpheus dies? What's he going to be up to? And so his whole thing, he's like a court musician who's too depressed to sing. It's so funny though. And it's not.
Yeah. I'm excited for
pretty early on.
Okay.
That he's too depressed to sing. Actually meeting him, though, it's incredibly funny. It's he's just such a little whiner. It's good. Yeah,
I am totally sold. I cannot wait. I can wait clearly because I'm going to continue to.
If you already have it and you're curious about it, this is a great place to jump in because this is basically game complete except for the game ending is the major stuff that they're working on apparently. If you want to wait, it seems like it'll be this year. So hopefully not a years and
crossing
years
my wait. Fingers, crossing my fingers that it'll be sooner than later. I guess we'll see.
Yeah, hopefully.
Rob, you had a piece go up today. Was it today that you went up? On Humankind, a game that we've talked about a little bit from trailers, the new Amplitude, the upcoming Amplitude 4X game, kind of Amplitude's take on Civ. Amplitude, of course, the folks behind the Endless series, Endless Space, Endless Legend, Endless, the one where you're doing like a weird tower defense MOBA thing. How was Humankind?
It was a bit odd, for sure. So just to give you a little bit of context, and this comes up in the preview I did. The big idea behind Humankind is you do pick civilizations early in the game, but just like human history, civilizations aren't static. They kind of evolve, right? Like a people becomes a different civilization as time moves on, aesthetics change, culture changes, etc. And so like, you know, you can start as the Mycenaeans and then you can next be the Greeks in the next period. Or you could be you totally do a gear shift thing, right? Where you can be like, actually, you know, we're the Chinese now. You know, we built our big stone fortresses on the islands. And now we're Chinese. And
what's that mean?
Is for each era, a civilization has different bonuses. So if you ever played the board game, what is it? Three Ages?
I don't think so.
Oh, God. Yeah. So the idea is with each era, your civilizations that are sort of associated with that era of history have different buffs and bonuses that work really well in that period. So the idea being that like in the classical age civilizations will have some really good shit available to them that will get less relevant as time moves on. Because here's the thing, where civilization is all about like build a rocket ship and go into space or get voted dictator civilization of the world because everyone likes you so much. Humankind is really just a score chase game. And you kind of run up the score. Like you have more opportunities to like rack up scoring points if you kind of stand pat and say like, no, like on this civilization, yes, I'm falling behind the tech curve, but if I add a few more achievements to my civilization, like, you know, build a few more monuments, go do a little more exploring, I just get more score points. So I might be falling behind the progression curve, but I'm getting more points. Somebody else might be saying, I'm going to get there first. And because it's like a draft and the civilizations on offer are whittled down as players enter those new eras and pick their civilization. Like if you are early to the era, you can be whoever you want. If you're last to an era, you kind of get whoever is left.
Oh, so there can only be one for each civilizational type. Can you start out the gate as a civilization that didn't exist in the period? Like, can you be the like United States of America in the classical period?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think early in the game, I'd have to refresh my memory, but like you start as a nomadic tribe and you have a small, you have just a slate of like Bronze Age civilizations that existed. And that's who starts out the game.
Okay.
And then from there it forks. And they're saying that like by the end of the game, you got a million possible combinations of how you can chain together different civilizations.
That's really interesting. And also I read that doesn't mean that they're balanced.
Right. They were like, we don't know if it's balanced, which I love because if you played Endless Legend, Endless Legend was very much a game where you were like, is this right? Is this good?
This can't
am, I,
be right.
am I playing well?
Yeah.
And it was very much a game where it was like, it's cool.
Yeah.
Don't worry about
Don't
it.
Don't shut
so
the
much.
Fuck up and eat this dust. It's yeah. dope. You're a cool gold dust eating vampire. Just let it ride, homie.
Yeah, and so like I will say, like the Babylonians have like a city district that generates like food and science in the Bronze Age. And like it was ridiculously OP. Like I'd played other civilizations and then the Babylonians were just like growing science out of the ground and eating it. And Gee. I was like, damn, these people
now
are
that's
incredible.
Endless legend to me, actually.
Yeah, yeah pretty much. But the goofy thing was in this preview, the thing they wouldn't let you do was change ages. Like once you progressed out of the Bronze Age, if you clicked like, okay, I'm gonna become Celts. The game ended.
Right.
And so I didn't actually get a chance to see like what that progression would look like as you moved up through the eras, even though that's such a big part of the game, right? Because when you change eras, you lose your civilization bonuses and you get your new civilization's bonuses if you decide to move on. But you do get legacy bonuses. Mm-hmm. So each civilization you've been leaves like a legacy bonus on your character sheet, basically. And that kind of informs the unique traits of your faction as you get into the late game.
Cool.
And that sounds really cool, but I just kind of have to imagine how cool it would be
yeah.
because in the demo, they were like, yeah, you'll see more of that closer release.
When is release?
Next year.
Okay. So there's some time still. And are they doing their weird early access thing that they do sometimes? Or are they going to just wait?
I want to say that, yes, I want to say that they were going to stick by the early access thing.
Okay.
I consider that pretty endemic. But
that makes sense.
Don't hold me to that. I am now trying to remember something that was said offhanded, weeks ago. But
yeah, I've just checked. It's from a couple weeks ago. It looks like, yeah, they're doing their what they call open dev, which is like lots of opportunity to give them feedback. It's what they've done for their last few games. It seems like it works really well. I'm here for it. So shout out to Amplitude, a studio that I like. Hey, wow, they've been doing good stuff, you know?
Yeah, I think
Sega
I will say this.
Publishing some of the coolest strategy games is so weird.
Sega's like sideways like shuffle into being a strategy publisher, like starting with the Total War thing,
yeah.
where they're like, we got one more roll of the dice. What are we gonna do?
Mm-hmm.
Creative assembly. And then quietly are just like, yeah, Sonic, and then these strategy games.
Oh, that's so sad. That's like, well, like the thing that's sad, they should get one of these studios to bring back the Shining Force games, which were like the Sega Genesis Tactics series, much loved by fans and then thrown to the wolves as time progressed. I would love to see Amplitude do a Shining Force game. Make it happen, Sega. That'd be dope. All right. I think we are frankly out of time for today's recording. Our first segment went much longer than I think we thought it would. So I'm going to start wrapping up. We'll be back on Monday. We can catch up on some other stuff, including all the Pokemon stuff that has happened. I know, Kata, you have a lot of Pokemon thoughts. Pokemoba. I know. We'll talk about the Pokemoba on Monday. And then we'll also talk about some other stuff. So look forward to that. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Rob?
At Rob Zachney.
Gita.
At XOXO Gossip Gita.
Kato.
At @A_Kato_appears.
Well, everything we do, twitter.com/waypoint, waypoint.advice.com. As always, thank you to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. Patrick at the Jet, but you can follow him at Patrick Klepik on Twitter. And as always, this week, as much as any other, fuck capitalism, go home.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome back, Patrick. Patrick hasn't been playing anything because
I beat Final Fantasy in March, so that was an accomplishment. And then April, I guess. And then I spent all of May playing Gears Tactics. I beat that. Okay. And then I'm playing Last of Us before the that ghost code shows up probably tomorrow.
Patrick, where are you?
I will not finish it. Rob, I had such a deep
Patrick, where are you?
Well, one, I think I like the game more than you do, with some reservations. We could just talk about this.
Save this for the pod. Kato.
Pokemoba.
You're also playing the cafe game?
I'm also playing the cafe game. I'm also in the DLC. Pokemon.
I want to hear about both of these things.
So. Okay. Got it.
That's okay. That famous saying, it's a me, Pokemon time.
Yeah, that is you.
That's
how it goes. All right. Let me start recording.
Podcasts are work, but it's nice to see all of you today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let me turn down my fan. One second. All right.
Did that just make like a little...
Yeah, it does like a little chime. It's the the air conditioning unit thing.
Ready the cyber fan?
Because I'm Austin. I'm like a cyber fan. It's not. It's
make
the,
sure
it's
make
the
sure and pay attention to the cyber fans at the during the Cyberpunk stream today.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's time that is. 37 seconds.
First time ever I opened it before you said time dot is.
Nice. Getting ready.
I like that. Prepped. Adding the extra edge, like just a little bit of, gotta get that link open. I like it.
All right.